And with that, if you would please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, changes to today's agenda, please.
Amendment number one to the September 10th, 2013 board agenda. Addendum to item number 26, withdraw the request to support the preferred Bob Jones pathway alignment. It has been determined that the board action on the Bob Jones pathway octagon barn connection study is not needed at this time. With the support from the County Parks and Recreation Commission, the next county action will occur at the project design phase. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We'll move then to our consent agenda, and I have three requests to speak. I would also ask, please, for the general public comment period, items not on the agenda, which comes up next, if you could please get your slips to the dais. We'll take those slips that are on the dais as that item starts. I already have 16 slips in general public comment today. So with that, we'll go for a public comment on the consent agenda, Dr. C. Height, followed by Lindy Owen.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos. September is emergency prepared month. With a $3,500 budget, it is an insult to the Office of Emergency Services and their partners that this board has not empowered Emergency Planning Zoning 5 Los Osos to evacuate during construction on the Los Osos wastewater project.
Unit 2 at the Appletane Nuclear Power Plant automatically shut down just before 10 o'clock this morning. Two employees there described the incident as similar to an explosion.
This is the second time in about 2 weeks that a Diablo unit has shut down. As you may recall, on June 26th, Unit 1 shut down. This came after a leak was found on a pipe that is part of the residual heat removal system.
Just when you thought it was safe to live in Los Osos. We can't evacuate without a plan.
State Street is one of dozens in Los Osos occupied by construction workers and drilling rigs. Residents say the once quiet town has been turned upside down, and they are not happy about it.
All the traffic is being diverted on two little streets at one time, and then they block 11th Street at the same time. So you're diverted down one little block.
Just when you thought it was safe to live by a fire station.
At the hazard mitigation plan is required to be revised every 5 years. Emergency services says it will be finalized in October.
I'm still waiting for an answer. Just when you thought it was safe.
Thank you. Thank you, Hope. Ms. Owen, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. On this item of emergency preparedness education, first I'd like to say I think $3,500 to educate, bring the community up to be well educated for all emergency possibility anymore. Driving in Los Osos is a total experience. Currently, CDF, I believe, has contacted Waddell, John Waddell of the project, to let him know that the CDF emergency fire vehicles that also take care of emergencies in people's homes, medical emergencies, excuse me, are having about a five-minute delay, up to five-minute delays, to get to people when they are needed. CDF is contractually obligated to a five-minute response time, so this is almost doubling their time. The ambulances that often come from Morro Bay, because we have none in Los Osos, are also experiencing problems arriving at emergency locations because of the road blockages, and they were not even informed. HDR is being paid $7.6 million to be the PR and the project manager and the coordinator of the different construction crews. I beg you to please, for Los Osos' sake, at least get this together so that fire engines and emergency vehicles can get to people. It could be life and death for a lot of people. And then I would ask that you consider funding this preparedness idea. In Los Osos, we don't know where to go if there's an emergency. I think those are very clear things that every community should be having meetings to decide if something were to go wrong, where do you go, how do you handle it, where will supplies be. There's a lot that could be done, and I hope this
Thank you, Ms. Owens. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening with comments on items 1 and 17. On item 1, September 1st, I had the great joy of getting on a bus in Atascadero, getting off the bus in Avila, and hearing the symphony. It was great. Thank you, musicians. Thank you, Jane, and all the other musicians of the symphony, and Café Musique, and the Cuesta Chamber Choir. And then we left. It took a long time to get back across the pedestrian bridge, and there was a tremendous jam getting out of the parking lot. The one shadow over that beautiful music event was the question, what in the real world would happen if the sirens went off just then? Those of you who were at that event, play out some scenarios in your mind. That's just a little reality check. I think others have spoken well to this issue. On item 17, request for approval agreement for engineering consulting services with Quincy Engineering for El Camino Real over the Santa Margarita Creek Bridge Replacement Project. Let us learn from a dismal experience with Caltrans, and now that we are the lead agency, do it right. The RTA had no clue that the service disruptions were coming until they happened, because that project had been exempted by Royal Fiat, by Schwarzenegger, from the California Environmental Quality Act. The community was offered no knowledge and no mitigations. It is very likely that this project will cause not only traffic disruptions, but service disruptions on the RTA Route 9. Let us plan for them. Let us anticipate them. Let us have ample time to work with the agency. Let us recognize that these disruptions are a required mitigation of the project, and that the mitigation to the riding community should be considered a part of the project cost and not imposed on the RTA. Let's learn from the recent example of what not to do that Caltrans taught us, and we, being this county with its ethic of public service, not for ourselves alone, we will do it right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. That is our last request to speak. So I'll close public comment, bring it back to the board, ask my colleagues if they have any items to pull. It's on consent. I don't have any on further on consent. Mr. Hill?
None, sir.
Ms. Arnold?
Ten.
All right. Mr. Meacham?
Just a comment on 1 and 13.
1 and 13. Would you like to lead us off on 1?
I would. Thank you. This is a resolution proclaiming September as Emergency Preparedness Month, and I think every month should be an Emergency Preparedness Month, and I keep reiterating this over and over and over again. To get yourself prepared in case of any emergency, take care of yourselves first. Don't worry. Don't be waiting for somebody to come take care of you. Take care of yourselves first, then your neighbors, then move out from there. So just again, we are vulnerable to all sorts of emergencies out there. Look at the fire season that's taking place right now. So you just need to have yourself together, because I can tell you, just recently seeing a fire take place, how quickly it can take off.
All right.
With that, I'd make a motion to approve the consent calendar with the exception of item
number 10.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. And I'd entertain a motion on 10.
Can I ask a clarification, since it's an issue that comes before all of us of County Council? When we serve on boards across, you know, the county, whether they be nonprofits or otherwise, and they receive funding, are we supposed to? My understanding is that there is not a unless it's a incompatible office, there's not a conflict.
Rita Neal, County Council. My office is currently in the process of reviewing this issue, trying to identify what boards, different nonprofit boards and otherwise, that our members of this board sit on, what, if any, contracts we enter into with them, and then doing an analysis on each of the levels of conflicts of interest, whether it's FPPC, Government Code 1090, or appearance of a conflict. In my discussions in regards to the CAPSLO item this morning, as we're in the process of that research, Supervisor Arnold and I discussed that she would simply recuse herself until we can finalize our opinion in that regard. So in the past, most of the board members have gone ahead and voted for contracts. In this instance, since it is under review, I think that recusing herself out of abundance of caution is appropriate way to go.
Is that going to come back to us in terms of a report from your office?
I will be reporting to each individual board member, the board as a whole, whether I do it publicly or as legal advice to the board. I will let you know. We can discuss it then.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Madam Counsel. So I will entertain a motion on number 10.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, gentlemen. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call vote.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Thank you. All right. With that, we move to public comment for items not on our agenda. We will go with the slips that are on the dais right now, which we'll time for 3 minutes, and that amounts to about an hour's worth of public comment. So, as always, I will advise you that you are more than welcome to use less than 3 minutes to also indicate your support of others' opinions that you may have heard before you. But with that, we'll start with Jane Swanson, followed by Linda Seeley.
Good morning. Jane Swanson, spokesperson, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. I'm here to present a request to this board, given its responsibility for public safety and property. I speak on behalf of Mothers for Peace, the citizen organization designated 40 years ago by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as interveners, meaning that our all-volunteer organization has equal legal standing with PG&E and the NRC staff regarding the operations of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. The mothers also speak for many people living and working in the shadow of the two Diablo reactors and the waste storage that sits surrounded by 13 earthquake faults. Their support is expressed when they attend our events, give us donations to support our legal challenges, and even like us on Facebook. That counts too, because public education is part of our mission. My topic is the dangers presented by the radioactive waste on site. Linda Seeley, also spokesperson for Mothers for Peace, and I will verbally summarize a written statement that we will email to this board later today. The written version will provide online links to documents from the NRC and the Union of Concerned Scientists that will back up the statements we make at this meeting. Mothers for Peace does not claim to be experts, but we claim to know experts. And when we quote government sources, we feel assured that the statements we make are well backed up. The request is that this board write a letter requesting that the radioactive fuel currently stored in unprotected pools at Diablo Canyon be moved on an accelerated schedule into dry casks at the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. The circumstances that prompt this request are timely and urgent. The NRC is currently revising its Waste Confidence Act, which addresses how radioactive waste are to be stored long-term. Long-term is either 300 years or 250,000 years, depending. As part of this revision, the NRC is conducting 12 public meetings throughout the nation, and one of them is right here in San Luis Obispo on October 7. The greatest danger to the public presented
the environment. So the reason that we want you to write this letter is that not only is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission coming to town this October 7th for a public meeting, which someone else will talk about, but there is also a Senate bill, a Senate Bill 1204 in the United States Senate, that is a nuclear waste management bill that's under consideration, and it does not provide for moving the spent fuel into dry cask storage. The Union of Concerned Scientists says, spent fuel pools initially designed to hold slightly over one reactor's core's inventory of irradiated fuel now hold up to nearly nine reactor cores of irradiated fuel, and that is true here at Diablo Canyon. Unlike the reactor cores, the spent fuel pools are not protected by redundant emergency makeup and cooling systems and or housed within robust containment structures having reinforced concrete walls. They're much more vulnerable. The Union of Concerned Scientists want the inventories of irradiated fuel and spent fuel, fuel pools to be reduced. The state of California is also urging the transfer of spent fuel pools to dry casks. The California Energy Commission's Integrated Energy Policy Report stated, quote, in light of the accidents and or plant shutdowns following earthquakes at Fukushima, Daiichi, and others, they recommend to reduce the volume of spent fuel packed into storage pools and consequently the radioactive material available for dispersal in the event of an accident or sabotage. PG&E and SCE should do this as soon as possible. We would like you to send a letter to the NRC, to PG&E, to Senator Boxer, Senator Feinstein, Congresswoman Lois Capps, the California Energy Commission, Cal Fire, the Office of Emergency Services, and the California Highway Patrol. And I want to add one thing. Yesterday, I stopped at the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce and asked them for information about Diablo Canyon, and both of the attendants there said, what? What information about Diablo Canyon? There is nothing there. We have asked repeatedly for that, because we have 1.7 million visitors to this county every year, and lots of them go into the Chamber of Commerce, and there is no information there for them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Seeley. Mr. Schumann, followed by Fred Frank.
Good morning. My name is Klaus Schumann. I come from Paso Robles. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I strongly support the request by Mothers for Peace. Fred Frank and I talked to each of you individually about the risk from the overcrowded spent fuel pools at Diablo Canyon. In my judgment, those pools are the most dangerous parts of the entire plant and should be returned to the original low-density design as soon as possible. But don't take my word for it. Nationwide, nearly 200 citizens groups, environmental organizations, and scientists have come to the same conclusion. For example, the director of nuclear safety projects with the Union of Concerned Scientists, David Lochbaum, states in his most recent briefing to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and I quote, "The overcrowded spent fuel pools are like loaded guns aimed at neighboring communities." Well, this man doesn't mince words, does he? An NRC study released in June of 2013 estimated that an accident at an overcrowded spent fuel pool could contaminate 9,400 square miles and force the long-term relocation of 4.1 million people. That's an NRC study. End of quote. And as a note, 9,400 square miles is about three times the size of San Luis Obispo County. I quote again, the Union of Concerned Scientists advocates accelerating the transfer of spent fuel pools into dry cast. The thinned down spent fuel pools are not absolutely safe, but are far safer and more secure. A study by the NRC in June 2013 estimated that the land contamination and displaced persons from an accident at an overcrowded pool would have consequences 50 times worse than the same accidents would have at a thinned-down pool. And Mr. Lochbaum continues, overcrowded spent fuel pools simply have to be thinned down before lots of people pay a very high price. And I would like to point out the accelerated transfer, as advocated by the Union Concerned Scientists, was identified as the environmentally superior alternative in the county's EIR, for Diablo's dry cast facilities in January of 2004, but regrettably was not implemented by PG&E.
Due to a fire that burned for hours in the conduit that carried the power supply to the feed water pumps for the nuclear reactor, as well as all the sensors, burned for hours, and it caused a very close call. The fire chief recommended putting water in there, but the plant manager said, don't do it. The fire burned for 2 hours. It was only because of some technician was able to bypass the whole system and reduce, get flow of cooling water into the reactor that prevented the meltdown. I also talked to staff about malfunctions and accidents at the nuclear reactors at Trojan plant and at the Rancho Seco plant. And they indicated that accidents and malfunctions do occur and that the plants were shut down. This past year, four plants have been shut down in this country alone because of malfunctions or accidents. Following my retirement, I served on a county waste nuclear waste management committee, and as a result of several years of study, we concluded that the most significant problem is overloaded spent fuel pools. This was over 10 years ago. As has been discussed, and I won't go into details, that the Nuclear Regulatory is meeting here and is recognized that if a accident occurred at the spent fuel pools, it could contaminate 50 times the area with radioactive waste as a accident involving a dry cast. And it's been further demonstrated in Fukushima that even though the place was inundated by a tsunami, and in some cases the spent fuel pools were, the dry cast were covered up, they still functioned effectively.
Thank you.
I see my count time is about away, and I hope that you would respond by October 22nd. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Ms. Adams, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning, Chairman Gibson and members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Jay Adams. I've been a resident of Paso Robles for 22 years. I strongly support the request by Mothers for Peace that you write a letter to the NRC. I believe it is very important for you to express our community's concern about the risks. the risk from the crowded, spent fuel pools at Diablo now. And I say now because there seems to have been a shift in the attitude of the NRC towards local or state input. In the past, the NRC has generally ignored any community input which was critical to the regarding the Commission's handling of security or safety issues. However, the Presidential Blue Ribbon Commission on Nuclear Waste has recently come to the conclusion that local and state involvement are essential for any longer-term solutions, permanent or temporary, to the ongoing accumulation of nuclear waste at the power plants. Therefore, I believe that this time around, the NRC will be more open to local input. So, why not use the opportunities on October 7th at the meeting and in the open public comment period, which ends October 22nd. The NRC has specifically asked for our concerns about the waste. Let's give it to them. Thank you for your attention to this matter of crucial importance to our community.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Ms. Tacker, followed by Andrea Seastrand.
Good morning. I'm Julie Tacker from District 2, and I live in Los Osos. And after hearing the previous speakers, I feel like my issues are so minor. What Mothers for Peace has brought to you is such a bigger deal than any water basin, than the estuary, than all of us. And I also will encourage you to write that letter. Today I am here to speak to the dewatering in Los Osos. Some weeks ago, I brought you all a letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board expressing its displeasure in the sequencing of dewatering and how that disposal has been expedited to the bay rather than to dry land where it could percolate and be used in our aquifers again. Mr. Gibson suggested that he and public works staff were going to meet with the water board and inform them on how the project is supposed to proceed. They did meet. I don't know that it's going to work as all of our septic systems come offline and the wastewater will be treated at the plant and then disposed of in that Broderson leach field. We want to see if it's going to work. So things are backwards in Los Osos. We are not monitoring the wetlands. The wetlands are stressed right now due to drought. We are further taking their water away through this dewatering. County staff expressed to the regional board that if they stop the project due to this mishap, that that would drive the cost of the project up. I would say that it's a pay now or pay later endeavor, in that if you don't stop and do it right, you will be paying the mitigation for the repairs to the estuary and the basin.
Your time is up. Ms. Seastrand, followed by Ben DeFadden.
Good morning. Andrea Seastrand, resident of San Luis Obispo County and also of Grover Beach. Mr. Chair, I know as a progressive, you pride yourself on transparency in government, openness in government, and so I am making a respectful request, a second request, that the Resilient Communities Agreement be agendized for a hearing. The Resilient Community Agreement must be important because you and Supervisor Hill are inaugural signatories. The Resilient Communities Agreement must be important due to our neighbor, our county to the south, Santa Barbara County. Three of the supervisors are also inaugural signatories, and this includes Chairman Salud Carbajal, who I might add is the vice president of ICLE, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiative, USA. And he was the host at UC Santa Barbara of the forum that took place at UC Santa Barbara. It was well attended, I understand, by elected officials from the Central Coast as well as staffers from government. I would say the Resilient Community Agreement must be important due to the guest speaker being the executive director of ICLE USA. And furthermore, the Resilient Community Agreement must be important due to at least one senior planner from this county in attendance. So based on all of that and the importance that I'm assuming it is, I again respectfully for the second time request that the Resilient Community Agreement be agendized so we, the citizens of this county, will be clued in on the content of the Resilient Community Agreement. I have not been able to find anything that explains what that agreement is all about. So I know, Mr. Chair, you do not want to be perceived as exercising power behind the scene, and so I respectfully again ask that this agreement be agendized. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seastrand. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Carol Hisasue.
Good morning, Board, Sheriff, and Prophet Kai and Ben DeFatta from the torn-up streets of Los Osos. I had a dream Saturday night that President Obama knocked on my front door, and after some introductions, he asked for my opinion of his accomplishments for the past 4.5 years. Well, I said, you come to the right guy. I started out with his history. How come you were the first president to apply for college aid as a foreign student, then deny you were a foreigner? How come you had a Social Security number from a state you never lived in? How come you were the first president to seal your medical, educational, and travel records? How do you account that 48 million people are on food stamps? How come there are 90 million people unemployed under your watch? He said, Mr. DeFatta, I have only a few more minutes. Do you have any other concerns? I told him we had many problems in this county where our representatives and supervisors seem to be deaf about our concerns in their respective communities. Many problems in the public brings up seem like having to a shootout at the OK Corral in this room. For instance, the board does not seem to do anything in a timely manner to solve the yearly homeless problem until winter comes around, while in reality it's a yearly problem. This county and the feds don't seem to want to do anything about the tons of nuclear waste in our populated area endangering the public and marine life. Our supervisors seem to have their hands tied with the feds on this subject. In fact, our supervisor, for his own reasons, wanted to kill millions of marine life with his ultrasound method of seeing how much seismic activity an atomic bomb generating plant can withstand. A few years ago, Mr. Badana wanted to build a shopping center adjacent to the county line, which has benefited the county, city, and many people immensely. But it took you guys 7 years to make up your minds to give him his permits to go ahead. We all have seen where Mr. Dan Duval has wanted to help the homeless and the sick with his 72-acre farm at a great savings to this county, but you guys took forever, and he even had to spend some jail time. We have seen the little town of Oceano get flooded every winter, which usually caused a dozen.
And who wouldn't want to minimize as much risk as possible? It just seems like a no-brainer to me. But right now, as it is, the spent fuel is packed in pools, and it's creating an unnecessary hazard. I think that if PG&E were as committed to safety as they claim they are, they'd want to expedite the transfer of spent fuel from the overcrowded pools to dry casks as soon as possible. Now, Mr. Meacham, you said earlier, quite wisely, I think, to be prepared, be responsible for your own disaster preparedness. I think of it all the time, and I understand that in the end, I'm responsible for my own life, my family's safety, and my property. But I think we also need to understand that we collectively need to protect the county. So I do hope that you take this message to the NRC, PG&E, and other parties responsible. Thank you for the opportunity to make this comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hisasue. Ms. Brous, followed by Henrietta Groot.
Good morning. My name's Elizabeth Bruce. I'm from Templeton, and I'm a member of Mothers for Peace. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, what is the Achilles heel of the nuclear industry? The permanent and safe disposal of nuclear waste produced in the gleaming buildings of modern design. It wasn't part of the plan. That's not our problem. We don't have to know how to do it. One day, down the road, the next generation or the next generation will figure it out. Americans pride themselves on being pragmatic dreamers. If a problem arises, with science on our side, we'll fix it. See the moon up there? Sure, we can send a man there. Nuclear waste? There must be a solution down the road. But until then, we'll continue producing this clean energy and advertise it as clean. No smokestacks at a nuclear plant. So what if nuclear waste contains plutonium-239, which remains toxin for 240,000 years? We are the now generation, which finds the Indian philosophy of acting in the interest of generations to come quaint. In June of 2012, the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. issued this decision. The NRC was ordered to study the impact of storing spent fuel indefinitely. Fukushima had already experienced the horror of the tsunami and must have been in the blueprint of the court. This must have been the reason behind their decision. In a typical hurry-up bureaucratic response, the NRC responded with a 2 to 4 year time frame for environmental review. However, its staff estimated that collection of data would take at least 7 years. How long will action take? Do we wait until Rome burns? No, we don't. We don't wait for a decision regarding temporary or permanent storage. The latter could take decades. While the NRC researches and studies the issue, the rods could be safely stored in dry cask containers, no longer jammed into open pools which can ignite or be the target of terrorist attacks. Public safety is at stake. The tragedy at San Bruno revealed the horror of not paying attention and not having your priorities in place. Remember, no matter how much we wish it weren't so, nuclear waste won't disappear.
Thank you, Ms. Bruce.
Thank you.
Ms. Groot, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Good morning. My name is Henriette Groot. I live in Los Osos. First of all, I'd like to express my complete support for the Mothers for Peace position. We must do the safest thing at this point for the nuclear waste that we now have. In addition, I want to express my support for the position that Elizabeth just took, and that is that it's incredible that we don't have a long-term solution. How can we deal with these man-made isotopes? According to Wikipedia, they claim that some of these materials last for millions of years. Well, we won't be around, so should we care? That's just overwhelming them, and they really don't know what to do with it. And I think eventually here in California, we will be paying a heavy price for that too. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Groot. Dr. Height, followed by Sherry Lewis.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos, continuing on a theme of accident prevention, negligence, and need for oversight. Just when you thought it was safe to live in Los Osos. Since reporting the problem to the county, it's gotten much worse. Just when you thought it was safe to live by a fire station. And I was disappointed that our street to our fire department was closed on the day that they started selling fireworks. Just when you thought it was safe to go to your mailbox. He never saw me. Just when you thought it was safe to walk down the road. And many of us don't see what's coming. We just hear the roar. Just when you thought it was safe to drive down the road. No flagman. Just when you thought it was safe to cross the road, and you at least now let us know that the walk light isn't working, but it doesn't do us any good trying to get across the road in the deteriorating crosswalks. Just when you thought it was safe to come home from the farmer's market, and just when you thought it was safe to ride a bus, we're on an on-call basis now for our bus stops. And supposedly there is an evacuation plan that includes a bus system, and a lot of our stops are now permanently cut off. And I have complained that you're blocking our evacuation in two locations on the same road. You slow down, you stop, then you go, then you slow down and you stop, and it's creating a bottleneck. Just when you thought it was safe to walk down the sidewalk. This is really a mess. Big tractor tires and asphalt on our sidewalks in Los Osos. 2 years ago, I looked like I had been beaten up after trip and falling onto a neglected sidewalk. Since reporting the problem to the county, it has gotten much worse. Those were very good pictures of the broken sidewalk. That's what I'm addressing today, sidewalk maintenance.
And the hazard mitigation plan is required to be revised every 5 years. Emergency services says it will be finalized in October.
Show me you have lifted a finger.
Thank you, Dr. Hyde. Ms. Lewis, followed by Laura Mordaunt.
My name is Sherry Lewis. I'm also from San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, and I live in San Luis Obispo. I have read portions of this draft confidence study, waste confidence study, that is what we've been talking about, where the NRC was made to conduct a study to find out how safe it is to have all this extra radioactivity in the spent fuel pools. And it's amazing what they say inside the draft, outside of the just the introduction and the final comment. The NRC study uses one reactor to analyze and then extrapolate from this study, and they say that they want to make a general case for all reactors in the country. And in October or November, they're going to come up with a waste confidence ruling. It says on... Let's see what page. I don't have the page. NRC plans to use the insights from this analysis to inform a broader regulatory analysis of the spent fuel pools in all United States operating nuclear reactors as part of its Japan Lessons Learned Tier 3 plan. So they're generalizing from this example. They also consider only a large seismic event. And they say low-density re-racking, or re-racking to low density, is not considered because such a situation would be inefficient in terms of regulatory. C is too much, taking into account the viability, economic viability of the industry, and not taking into account enough the safety to the public. Would you all please show up at this October 7th meeting with the NRC?
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Ms. Mordaunt, followed by Eric Greening.
Ms. Mordaunt is left.
Ms. Greening. Followed by Richard Margetson.
Eric Greening on several topics. First, I completely agree you need to agendize this letter so that it can be sent in a timely way, the one that Mothers for Peace are asking for. And I fully agree with Mr. Meacham about individually taking responsibility and being prepared. I'm wondering, however, how I should have been prepared at the symphony in Avila Beach. If you can't get out, you're supposed to shelter in place. Where was our shelter? How long would we need to stay there? What would we live on? Does taking responsibility mean not going to the symphony? No more Pops concerts? What does taking responsibility mean? A couple of other issues. First of all, is tomorrow's sustainable community strategy meeting open to the public? I know it's short of a quorum of several different boards and maybe six or seven people getting together. I know there is a different public meeting in that same room right at its conclusion. Is that particular meeting public or not? And if it's not, when will its results be reported, given that they will be incorporated into a public document? Then I wanted to give a bit of a legislative update, because this is sort of the crazy season in Sacramento when they're finishing up the year and bills are being gutted and mended like nobody's business. SB 4, Pavley's permissive / regulatory bill on fracking, has gotten more permissive and needs to be opposed. A quote, a well-granted confidential status pursuant to Section 3234 shall not be required to disclose well stimulation treatment fluid information until the confidential status of the well ceases, unquote. It's supposed to be about transparency, but it has lost that. That language fell in on September 6th. At least some language that didn't interfere with local CEQA review also fell in on the 6th, but it could easily fall out before it's voted on. The whole thing stinks. It needs to be opposed. So-called CEQA reform has sort of frayed out into various just plain banal irrelevancies. SB 743 now has been gutted and amended to exempt the Sacramento Kings Arena from CEQA. That's Steinberg's CEQA reform package on that one. If you have cronies, exempt them from what everybody else has to do. The infamous SB 731 has sort of backed off in terms of its immediate impacts. Now there's an Office of Planning Research to develop new criteria in 2014, but those criteria would exempt aesthetics, parking, and auto delay entirely from the CEQA process. It's still a bad bill. Nothing that purports to be CEQA reform this year deserves anything but opposition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Margetson, followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Margetson. Three things this morning. First of all, I gave you a two-page document, and I'll explain why you have that. The last month, you've had numerous discussions about the Paso groundwater basin. Mr. Gibson keeps bringing up the 2-to-1 retrofit to build ordinance in Los Osos as an example. What you have before here, and if anybody would like to talk about it, I'd be happy to, because some of you weren't on the board at that time. The first page is the first iteration of the retrofit to build credits. The second page is after three revisions that took over a year and a half that were elicited through public comment at this microphone. Look at the two pages. They're nothing alike. Nothing. So if you're going to go with a 1-to-1 offset, make sure that county staff has all of the numbers right, or you're actually going to be hurting the basin. Second comment. We've asked repeatedly here that the county come to the CSD meetings in Los Osos to present updates, give information. It's an opportunity for that information to get out to the community. The meetings replay twice a day, every day on Channel 20 in Los Osos until the next meeting. That's 60 opportunities a month for people in Los Osos to get information. One of our CSD directors at the last CSD meeting on tape stated that he had contacted Mr. Waddell and asked again that this happen. Mr. Waddell's response was, the county will never be presented, and it may come under the California False Claims Act. Thank you.
Ms. Owen, followed by Gary Kirkland.
Lindy Owen from Los Osos again. I would like to support Mothers for Peace request that you write a letter, and definitely if as many of you attend the upcoming meeting as possible. I think it's extremely important to transition to a safer storage. My two comments are I wanted to present the look of the Tri-W property at this point. Our beautiful park that Mr. Gibson says didn't make it because they didn't put the water on it to keep the plants alive after we spent $60,000 putting them in. This is how they handled the trail problem. Trail flooded ahead. The problem with this is that this is one of our dewatering places that the county promised. This is an outcharge, and you can see all the algae and stuff that's not very attractive there. It is a lovely park. But it's supposed to be a basin also. And the problem is that this basin is supposed to take much of the dewatering. We're talking 8 million to 16 million gallons daily removed from our upper basin. And Mr. Gibson supports putting it in the bay. That's what Ms. Tacker spoke about the regional board saying, no, it's supposed to go on land. This is supposed to go back into your basin, not be wasted. The county refuses to come up with the locations that they promised that they had, and I urge you to get some oversight on this project. The county is watching themselves, and it's not a pretty picture. Secondly, I'd like to talk, we're going to move to the next batch of pictures. I also have these to hand out. I want to, this is from the conditions of construction contract, page 30-330. And this is discussing what the contractors are supposed to do when they finish up. This is what most of the shoulders in Los Osos look like now. People used to be able to walk on them. They used to be able to park cars. The mail lady used to drive her vehicle. There wasn't dust spewing into the air. There wasn't dirt all over the streets. Obviously, what's happened is this is not being addressed, and it is supposed to be addressed, as it says here, contractors shall assume full responsibility for any damage to any such land or area or to the owner or occupant thereof or of any adjacent land or areas resulting from the performance of the work. It goes on to clearly identify that these are supposed to be restored to something that is close to what it was before. The response from the county's liaison, Michelle Hauser, was that they've been looking at it and they think they might come scoop some dirt out. When it rains in 2 months, you're not going to enjoy coming out to Los Osos. It's going to be a mud pile. This needs to be addressed, and if you cannot get some oversight, you're going to find out the results a little bit later, and I'm just horrified at what's coming. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Kirkland, followed by Edward Veek.
Hi, I'm Gary Kirkland from Atascadero. I want to address a couple of things. One, I don't support Mothers for Peace. I think people should die of nuclear radiation. You've got to die of something, and nuclear waste is just another way to die. Two, if the permanent storage waste would open in Nevada at Yucca, they wouldn't have those casks there. And three, in France, they process the uranium much further so there isn't much waste at all, but our country passed a law banning that because you can produce plutonium, which you can make a nuclear device, but that stuff could be processed much more, so it would be much safer, and there would be much less uranium to store. But the main reason I came was to talk about global warming. I'm in favor of global warming. When I was a teacher, which I just retired, I encouraged students to drive their cars as much as possible, use as much gas and as much as electricity, producing goods and services to make this a better place to live and raise the standard of living of people on Earth. What I see with the people who are fighting against global warming are trying to do is try to lower the standard of living of people, allow less electricity use, less energy use, and lower the standard so that people live poorer and less productive lives. If global warming occurs, Russia and Canada have the most land area of any countries on Earth. They're located, and anybody can look on a globe, in the northern part of the northern hemisphere. If global warming occurs, Canada and Russia will have a tremendous amount of land available for people to live, be productive, and grow. We need to encourage global warming, not discourage it. And I read in that their law is trying to stop global warming. Let's go for it. More global warming. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirkland. Mr. Veek is our last request to speak.
Edward Veek from Atascadero. ICLEI,
That's an acronym for the International Council, stands for the International Council for Local Environmental Issues, an arm of the United Nations, not an arm of ours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Veek. That closes public comment. And Mr. Meacham.
Sorry, a quick question if I could. The date, again, is October 7th for the nuclear regulatory meeting. Yeah. Where and what time is
I think...
I have the information, too.
Mr. Hill may have comments as supervisor of the district.
Got it right here. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll to the folks who came, I'll be in attendance at the meeting, and I will be sending in a letter to the NRC of concerns on storage issues, which I'll share with you. So,
all right. Any further questions of colleagues on the dais?
Yes, I have a few. Yeah. Thank you. So I had about four comments to make after hearing public comment, and the first one, after listening to so many of our speakers and their concerns about the spent fuel pools and the dry cask storage, I wonder if my colleagues might be up for a presentation here for further discussion in public, asking either PG&E to come in or our own Office of Emergency Services, and preferably prior to the need to agenda, or maybe simultaneously to agendizing whether or not we'll send a letter from the board so that we can discuss here locally hear more about the availability for our spent fuel, for declining the spent fuel pools, sending the spent fuel over to dry cask storage. So that's my one thing.
Well, if we take that up, colleagues have interest in directing staff to bring this back for a board information item with a possible board letter on this matter?
Sure.
Let me clarify, if I may, on a potential presentation. It would not be emergency services staff that would give an update on spent fuel storage. That would be from PG&E.
Okay.
So it sounds like there's consensus, Mr. Meacham, on that coming forward?
Sure.
All right. Ann?
Okay. My second thing, and this is in answer to Ms. Tacker's concerns. I haven't seen a letter that was sent by the board, or I don't know anything about a meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board on the dewatering situation in Los Osos. So was there a letter sent or a meeting or all that?
Well, I believe Ms. Tacker indicated she'd left a copy. I haven't seen it come down the dais at this point, but the county has written a letter to the Regional Water Quality Control Board explaining what's going on as regards dewatering and how it comports with the national permit that we are operating under. I did meet with the project team and the regional board staff, and we discussed the situation. The regional board staff understands what we're doing out there, has no issues with it at this point, is reviewing our letter, and we're hoping for a written response from them in the near future. But as of now, dewatering is going on as per the permit, and the regional board is not moving in any way to change what we're doing.
Okay. And I know it's common practice for different agencies and staff here at the county to communicate through letters with agencies, but if this has been elevated to the point where we have supervisors meeting with Regional Water Quality Control Board staff, or I think that I would like to see an update on that as well.
Well, we certainly can get you the exchange of communication on that. It's it is public record, and
I think what I'm asking,
so
was the letter from our board,
or
are you speaking for our board?
Was from our staff.
From our staff. Okay. Again, I'll just ask my colleagues, since this has been elevated, in my opinion, been elevated to a place where it somewhat is involving the Board of Supervisors, I wonder if there's interest in having an update on what's going on with the dewatering.
Well, I don't know at what point that is going to be coming back. I know we periodically have an update on the Los Osos project. I don't know when the next one is.
Right, and nor has it been set. And my thought is that we're operating under contracts and permits that we're meeting the conditions of. There is no issue that is relevant to the Board of Supervisors. The Board has made its decisions about permits and contracts, and we're in a construction phase. I attended that meeting to make sure that I understood the issues, but it really at this point is a staff-to-staff concern, and at a point where the regional board brings something forward that is pertinent and relevant to some action that our board may take, we certainly would consider that. As to update on the general nature of it, we can wrap that into the next Los Osos wastewater project update, and I'll contact staff and see when they're planning to do that.
I think what I'm asking for is, or I know what I'm asking for.
And I too would like to have an update on what's taking place. I guess the big concern, as you hear a lot of the folks present us with pictures and everything else, the oversight on this, is it where it should be? Is it taking place? And that's, I don't know, and that's something I'm going to ask Public Works about.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know either. I was just hoping that we have so many citizens that come every week and ask questions or bring comments or concerns. I just wondered if we might want to do it here. But if I don't have my colleagues on board with that, I too will, just to assure the public, I will be holding a meeting in my office with Public Works and trying to get updated. In answer to Ms. Seastrand's concerns about the resilient community, I don't know anything about that. Of course, it's our prerogative, any of us, to attend any kind of educational conferences or that we want to go to. But it sounds like we're sending our county staff. And if that's true, then I am going to ask if we might have a little update from planning staff on what that is all about, so that I understand why we're attending and what we're attending. So again, I'll ask my colleagues if maybe a 10-minute presentation from planning on what the resilient community, what that
is. I'm not aware of who attended, but I'm not really into you're asking basically for the Board of Supervisors to micromanage all of our staff and what exactly they do for their own. I don't see that as relevant to a public hearing or a public discussion. If you want to find out what staff go to meetings, ask them. I don't know. I'm not concerned one way or another.
I feel like when the public is bringing this up week after week, and we've again elevated that to a place where we're sending staff to conferences, I'm interested in a 10-minute presentation on what this is about.
We send staff to conferences all the time. You know, resilient communities is the idea of how we do planning in order to adapt to climate change and sea level rise, how we make wise investments in our public infrastructure. It's a long-standing program within our planning department to do wise planning for especially our coastal communities. Again, I think that's one where you may want to get an update from staff on a staff-to-you meeting. Did attend this conference. It was very informative as to issues of common concern up and down the coast. We're looking at a foot of sea level rise by 2050 and 3 feet by the turn of the next century. That's considerable concern for the huge population that lives within the affected area of that. And it is a topic that's long been on planning's radar and on planning's radar in every jurisdiction up and down the coast. So maybe staff could get you up to speed on what our county's been doing, and then if we see something that needs a public discussion, we can do that. I would submit Ms. Seastrand could go to the Internet and quite quickly find out what the agenda and the topic of that is. I know she knows how to get in touch with Supervisor Carbajal, who convened that meeting, and be a full rundown. If she has difficulty doing that, she's welcome to contact my office. So.
Okay, I appreciate that. I too can go on the internet.
Good.
Out of respect for the citizens that come and express concerns to us and may not agree sometimes with the direction county planning is going, I was just hoping we might take 10 minutes out of our public schedule and share with them some of the information that we get privately in our office. But I'll go to my fourth thing, and that is just a question probably for admin. And that is, we heard from Mr. Marsden that he has information, that he's been giving us information. I'm just wondering, I guess the ask is, what is the process for a citizen complaint? What do we do about that when we have citizens of an area and they have some information that they want to disseminate to us all.
Well, we certainly look into that, depending to whom it was submitted. It's my understanding, based upon Mr. Margetson's comments earlier, he submitted something to council just yesterday or this morning, so it sounds like it was very recently received, and I'll see Rita is putting her light on, so I'll let her comment further on if she's had a chance to look at that information yet.
Ms. Neal, Mr. Margetson, please.
Rita Neal, County Council. I did receive a message yesterday from Mr. Margetson indicating that he had some information. I hadn't had a chance to call him back, was actually hoping to touch base with him, and so if he does have some information that he'd like to submit, he certainly is free to provide it to me, and I was also going to advise him that in the event, based on his comments and his message yesterday and perhaps his comments this morning, if he thinks there's also some criminal activity, he could certainly provide that information to the Sheriff's Department, and I'm not sure he's done that. So, but any information he has, I'm happy to accept and take a look at.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Rita. And I was just curious about the process. So people that have complaints that they feel... There's one track, and that is if it's criminal activity, you report that to the sheriff, and if it's kind of citizen complaints...
Relate that and to close the loop, essentially, with the folks that have reported, depending on whatever the outcome may be.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for the benefit of the public to hear. And that's all I have.
Mr. In regard to that, if this is a legal issue, typically that will go through the legal channels, and then that way we go into closed session relative to something that would be of legal concern to the county, I would assume.
Absolutely. So we have fine staff looking into it. With that, I'm going to declare a break.
If I could, real
here, yeah, quick,
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify, going back to the spent fuel issue. Direction from board, I just wanted to clarify. I heard that we'd like to schedule a presentation at a future date with PG&E. Was there also direction for staff to draft a letter to bring for your board's consideration? I wasn't clear on that point.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just a quick question in that regard. I don't mind doing that, but if we have something coming up on October 7th, do we need to do something before that, or can we attend that October 7th meeting and then express our concerns at that point? I'm not quite sure how this whole process works in this regard.
I would defer to the supervisor of the district here to see how he'd like to move.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with asking PG&E to come and speak to some of the concerns about the storage. I think they'd be happy to. I don't know that we have the agenda time to have it before the 7th. I'm prepared to, you know, having obviously stay on these issues, prepared to send a letter to the NRC on my own concerns. I don't know that... again, you know, this is not within the purview and authority of the board in terms of waste issues or even how the assemblies and the rods are stored. So it's just basically an expression of our opinion based on our constituents.
As we have on the question of the seismic earthquake hazard. My thought would be to have Supervisor Hill work with admin and council to see what you might want to bring forward and when. I think it would be useful to have it before the 7th if we could. And I'll just leave you a point person on that, and we'll see where we get. We all are individually certainly able to write our own letters on
Absolutely.
Our own.
May
sure.
Again, I'm trying to address the speakers, so many that came here asking. I thought I heard them asking us as a board to agendize or to agendize a letter. And so in order to do that, and sometimes when we have presentations, informational presentations, I think it's just beneficial for us if we can do it in a short amount of time in a public setting. It also provides the information for the public that diligently comes and tries to weigh in. That's all I was asking. So if in response to the speakers that came in today, I would appreciate inviting PG&E to come and talk to us about it. And then going forward from there, after a informational presentation, discuss the possibility of agendizing a letter by the board.
All right. Okay, I think staff's got that direction. And with that, we're going to take a break. We'll reconvene at 10:45. And we have Madam Clerk, if you would introduce our next item, please.
Item number 20, a hearing to announce Proposition 218 results for the proposed tracks 1747 Streetlight Assessment District and submittal of a resolution ordering the improvements for the track 1747 Streetlight Assessment District, District 4.
Mr. Diodati.
Thank you. John Diodati from the Public Works Department.
Mike Button.
Now it's officially on. John Diodati with the Public Works Department. And I'm here before you today for a public hearing where I'm asking you to ratify the results of the Proposition 218 proceedings for Track 1747 and adopt a resolution determining that there wasn't a majority protest for those proceedings. Back on August 13th, your board held a public hearing, which was the final effort on the Proposition 218 proceedings for a streetlight assessment in Carriage Homes down in Napomo. And no interested party spoke for or against the assessment at that time. The clerk in Public Works in a public setting opened the ballots the following day, counted the ballots, and the results were in favor of passing the assessment. It was 66% in favor, 34% against. Proposition 218 is counted by dollar amounts, though. And in dollar amounts, that was $1,915.01 in favor and $983, excuse me, and 38 cents against the assessment. So the assessment per state law passed. Now just in the public hearing, ask you to ratify those results and adopt the hearing, identifying that there wasn't a majority protest.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. By a vote.
Yeah, Mr. Meacham. We'll take that comment. Seeing no others, I will open it to the public. I have no request to speak, so we will close it to the public. We'll give you a chance to wrap up or rebut, and we'll come back for action on the at the board. Mr. Honeycutt.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Frank Honeycutt. I'm with County Public Works. And as it's already been mentioned, we're looking at a flood hazard waiver for the Tucker property, also known as the Rocky Canyon Dog Kennels. The property in question, the kennels are located just east of Atascadero. They're as shown on the vicinity map. A little bit closer in, you can see that it's located on Rocky Canyon Road, just south of Highway 41, and across the river from the city limits. This site plan here was, well, for the most part, it was submitted by the applicant. I've added a couple of things you might notice. A north arrow. There is a couple of lines there that try to suggest where the river is. Those are all approximate. The upper suggests where water might be flowing if we had a very low flow. And the line there below would fall somewhere on the banks. Might also come to notice that there is a kennel on the property and there is an existing residence that's been there close to 30 years. Some more pictures here will help. This is a view taken from Google Street View, which according to the web was taken about March of 2012. You could see that the project is barely under construction at that time. The driveway's in. There's a graded lot. You can also see that the pad, if you look carefully, you can see to the far left of the photo there is water in the river. It's some number of feet below this pad, and the road is perhaps 20-ish feet above the pad. This is a photo taken about a month later by code enforcement. You can see that there's still some work going on, but the building is mostly up. And that kind of gives you a time frame for when the structure was built. Another view closer up, you can see the building itself and some kennels, or outdoor kennels adjacent. This here is an overview from our flood maps. As you can see from here, that the flood encompasses the kennel building completely. That 843 is the elevation that FEMA has calculated what the river height would be in a 100-year storm. You might also notice that the residence that's been there for some time is just barely outside of the floodplain. I assume that because the pad there is on a different elevation as to why it would be out and the kennel is in. This drawing here is not to scale, but it does kind of give you an idea of what would happen if the river was full of water in a 100-year storm. The applicant surveyor has noted that the elevation of the floor of the kennel is about 839 feet above sea level. The 100-year storm is calculated to be at 843, so there's about 4 feet of water in that in an instance of a 100-year storm. According to county code, there are some restrictions and some ways that we must address this. Before I get into that, I must point out that something that you may be aware of, but a lot of people are not, there is what we call the floodplain, and there is what we call the floodway. The floodway is actually in the river. You can see water moving by. There's usually velocity and turbulence involved. Whereas in the floodplain, that would be an area perhaps next to a river or whatever where the water just kind of finds its way there. And it would be at the same elevation. It would be at the same elevation, but there would not be the turbulence involved. So it's become necessary over the years to define what is a floodway and what is a floodplain. So by county ordinance, we're not allowed to limit the capacity of the floodway. Any building in or near it would have to be properly anchored. Things like electrical panels and the heating system need to be above the at least 1 foot above the floodplain. Residential structures, such as a living space, and I would say living space for humans, would need to be also at least 1 foot above the floodplain and entirely out of the floodway. Non-residential structures, which I would consider the kennels to be, are allowed in a floodplain, but then they would have to be floodproofed. And a number of things are involved in floodproofing, like properly anchoring. Where variances are allowed, they need to show good cause. They need to demonstrate that there would be exceptional hardship, and they'd also need to demonstrate that there would be no threat to public safety, no public nuisance. Basically, wouldn't be harming anybody else. There is also the possibility that if the county as a whole neglects their responsibilities here, FEMA could raise the rates by other people applying for flood insurance. And so, based on the county ordinances and the federal regulations, it is staff's recommendation that you adopt the attached resolution that denies the variance that's been requested. And with that, I'll be happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Honeycutt. Do, any questions from colleagues on the board? Seeing none, I have one. You were differentiating floodway from floodplain, and in the diagram that you showed, the 843-foot elevation is which, the floodplain elevation or the floodplain?
You know, that's a good point I neglected to mention. It is well within the floodway.
Okay, and where's the floodplain?
In this case, the floodplain and floodway are coincident.
Are the same.
Other parts of the county, it would not, the floodplain would extend quite a ways out.
Okay, and so the question of development within the floodway is a higher bar than within the floodplain?
Yes.
Okay. And then the other question I had is that there was a photograph of the site under code enforcement. By code enforcement, what was the nature of that? Was that random, or is that...
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Another important detail I left out. The structure was built without permits. Code enforcement became aware of that. Well, they were well on their way, but they weren't finished. They were directed that they need to get permits. So naturally, the applicant applied for building permits. They verified the zoning, things like that. When it came to Public Works to evaluate it for a flood, that is when we determined and told them that the structure you just built is within the floodway and should not be within the floodway.
Okay. All right, thank you. That's helpful. Any further questions of staff? Ms. Arnold?
Just a verification, Mr. Honeycutt. The The cement slab, there had been a dug kennel there before, correct, in that same spot?
You know, I've heard that before. I have no way of knowing that. All I have is the picture that was taken by Google. You can see some work done, some fresh work, but I don't know the age of the slab.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. And with that, we'll open it to the applicants and their agent. I have a request to speak from Margaret Holstein, or Holstein. It was a 50-50, and Ms. Tucker. And we can time you for a total of 10 minutes at this point, as you wish.
Good morning, and welcome, Mr. Chair and supervisors. Thank you for letting me speak on behalf of Mrs. Tucker. She will be speaking to on this matter. So I appreciate the Public Works staff's report, and this has been one of the questions that was just asked, so my husband always tells me to slow down, is that this business has been on that site since 1996. So that's 17 years in the business of a dog kennel. The slab was there prior to the code enforcement. It's just it wasn't all enclosed. That's how this came about. It revolved around them having for their the weather prevention for their animals and stuff left, and the safety of the dogs, and for the you know for the people felt more comfortable with their animals there. So then that I did submit that the county public works did not have an engineering report. I did get that last night, 5:30 at night, from Mr. Cudla. Gave us an engineering report on the flood there, so you can have that for the staff. You're just now seeing it, like I just got it last night. What I wanted to bring up to, I hope it's 10 minutes for each, or is it 10 minutes for both?
Well, you can speak for 10, and Ms. Tucker can have three. You'll have another five-minute rebuttal, but we want to get the information on the record here, so please carry on.
So what I wanted to speak about is on the Rocky Canyon, it is a small mom-and-pop business, and it's needed service in our area, and I realize it's in the FEMA flood zone, but is at this time the only dog kennel left in the city of Atascadero or the countryside. There is not any more due to a lot of the economic things that have gone in on to our county. That doesn't rectify what's going on that is in the FEMA 100-year flood zone. As a native of this area, I've seen the Salinas River for I won't tell you my age. Never mind about that. I've seen it for years. And at this time, when I have, in the 30 years that Mr. Heilman built that house in 1983, that parcel has never flooded. So I just want to bring that to record to the planning department. Then he's correct. It went over to Public Works, and that's where we have the hiccups going here. But in the meantime, we worked very diligently with CAL FIRE has been on the job on the site, checked over our site. We worked with putting emergency plans in place for fire and safety, emergency plans if it was going to flood. And then in the years of flooding for the Salinas River, it doesn't flood overnight. I mean, usually you know the Salinas River like I know the Salinas River. It might take 2 days. It just doesn't pop up. But if you think it's going to pop up overnight, you're going to at least have 8 to 12 hours notification that it's going to pop up. And we did give you an emergency plan how the building can be dismantled, plus the engineer's survey that I just submitted to you to show you how it can be rectified that way. I think we've given a lot of information here, like I say, with CAL FIRE, elevations, Twin Cities. We have the I also have, it says in the FEMA, in the 446006, it says flood warning times that are 12 hours or greater. Flood warning times, and this is in the variance part of the FEMA, said that times of 2 hours or greater may be approved in the community to demonstrate that it has have a flood warning system or emergency plan, which we have, in operation that is adequate to ensure the safe evacuation of floodplain. It says residents, but there wasn't anywhere on there that it had a dog kennel on the FEMA website. I did find on the FEMA website that I thought was very interesting, and it's in North Carolina, North or South Carolina, it doesn't really matter, where FEMA has allowed a dog park in the 100-year flood zone. And I copied that. That should be some of your staff report that should have been given to you. I'm sorry that the print was real small. I tried to highlight it because when I copied it off my computer, it was very hard to read. But it talks about how they have fencing, they have bathrooms, and they have bridges for the dogs to go across and different things, of course, the fire hydrants. And that is in the, was approved through the Rotary Club in North Carolina approving a dog park in the 100-year floodplain. I can't attest it's the floodplain like that was just mentioned, but I did give that to you for as evidence. I'm trying to go over all this stuff for you. One of the things I wanted to bring up, and I don't always like to bring this up, I'm on the Planning Commission for the City of Paso. The reason I'm only bringing that up to say to you, I've been on there 9 years, and we have approved projects. We have what we call a river walk. It's not quite like the building facilities like that we're looking at for this dog kennel, but we have approved projects in our 100-year floodplain. The river walk is there. It has bridges. It has fences. It has concrete. It has signs. It has the light bollards that are there. That's in our 100-year floodplain. We just approved another project out on the east side of Paso Robles, and this is called a trailer park for big RVs. But what came out of that planning of it in the 100-year flame is like at, up in Yosemite, you have these big tent buildings, and you can camp. Those will be permanent structures along the Huera. And the county, the city did approve that project, and it is in the 100-year floodplain. So I just wanted to give you some things that are happening on the, not the same, but happens in the FEMA area, and we do approve those in the city of Paso. By the time the background stuff that comes to us, it's a staff report, they give us it's in the flood zone, and we don't get into the insurance and all that, the backyard technical stuff, but it says recommending for approval. And we have approved those projects. We've also gone out and got insurance. She is can have insurance. I put that in the evidence from Ted Hamm. The FEMA insurance is available to her for this. And I just hate to see us lose another business, and it is a very well-needed service. It's, I'm sure, I don't know how many of you have dogs. I have dogs. Go to the pet store, go to any of those places, and you're going to see people are in there all the time. But also, I am concerned if something is not, I've talked to staff at the Public Works. I came in personally, tried to rectify a little bit of this, see if we could work this out. And basically at that time, they just said we're in the 100-year flood zone and there's not going to be any rectification on that. Because I asked them, I gave them, for instance, I says, what if we were going to plant, we can't now, but plant grapes. Back then we could plant grapes and put up fencing to keep the deer out. And but actually at that level, the Public Works said, nope, there's nothing that can be put on there. So my point in bringing this up is the house only occupies a third of the acre. So there's 11.3 acres. So I figured 5,000 square feet that the yard occupies in the house. So we have 11 acres that she's been paying property taxes on for 17 years. And she's been in business for 17 years. Yes, she's a code enforcement. I can't do anything about that. But I think, like I said, the property to me at this point, except for the little house, has become valueless. And I would like to see, I don't want to see, I have the confidence you're going to vote the right way. I think this can be worked out. I think there probably could be some conditions. As you see with Mr. Cudlow's drawings there, that's signed by a civil engineer. And that we can fix this. So it's a long, narrow building. We're looking at our elevations as only being 2 to 3 feet in the floodplain. That building is 8-foot-tall building. Staff said we're 4 feet in. It depends on whose elevations we're going to take. Is it going to be my civil engineer, came from Twin Cities, or is it staff's? He was there on the ground, and they actually did the surveying on the slab. So it was like 2.9 and 3.07. So the shallow end was at the front of the building. The back end is it's a little farther in the flood zone. And I think we have demonstrated in good faith how this can work for everybody. I don't see why that can't happen. And if there's any questions, I know there's probably more I should be talking about. If I could come back and give some, as you said, give me the privilege, and
we'll have one more period here.
Okay,
and
thank you.
Before you leave the lectern, could we have your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Margaret Holstein. Pastor Robles.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let me go ahead and ask Ms. Tucker if you would like to address us. I take it I don't have any other requests to speak, and seeing no one in the audience indicating an interest. Ms. Tucker, about how long do you think you need
just
to?
Just a couple minutes.
Okay.
I was watching.
Fine. Yeah, good. That'd be fine. Good. All right.
Okay. So I'm Melanie Tucker from Atascadero, and I was just going to give you a little timeline of kind of what happened. So the kennel was there, and then we built the kennel's been there since 1996, and then we built that building in March of 2012. And I received a code enforcement letter on April 4th, and I contacted a civil engineer right away. He drew up the plans and got them ready to submit. I dropped the plans off by April 18th, so all within a couple of weeks I was trying to comply, and then I received a phone call to come pick up my corrections, and when I got them, they just handed them to me, and I went to the car and I read them, and it said that we were in the floodway and one of our options was to tear the building down, and of course I was shocked, like I thought I was just picking up a correction for something. So I talked to the engineer when we had a meeting with Planning and Building and Public Works in mid-June, and we worked through all of the other corrections and everything. The only thing we couldn't work out was Public Works because the building is in the floodway. So they advised us the next step would be to have the property surveyed to see how far in the flood zone we actually were, because according to the Public Works maps, the whole building would be inundated with floodwaters and be underwater and everything. So we had the surveyor come out, and they found out that it was about 3 feet in the low zone and about 3.5 feet because of the building slopes for drainage. So it's not the whole building that's in the water. It's only about 3 feet. And the building has six big openings on it. It's not even fully enclosed. You saw one from that straight shot building. Well, there's six more on the front and then another one on the other side. So it's not even fully enclosed. Water would be able to run through. And one of the other concerns Public Works had was they said that other debris floating down the river could float through like a big tree or something if it flooded and wipe out the building. Well, a big tree can't float in, 3 feet of water. It's not the whole building to wipe out. It's just a smaller area. So, and again, the water would be capable of just flowing through the building. But we also submitted to you guys an emergency plan if flooding was coming, and we had noticed that we could disassemble the whole building in 4 to 6 hours and haul it out. We have the means to do that. We have a contractor that lives on the property. That's what he does, metal buildings, and so they have generators and all that stuff. So we could get the building out of there, and it wouldn't even be an issue. The dogs could be evacuated. We have another property in Atascadero. We can evacuate dogs, too, if there was an issue. So then when the survey, we submitted the results of the survey, and they said that it didn't matter. We were still in the flood zone, so the next thing to do was to write a letter to you guys asking to grant a variance for the property. So we've been working on all of those things, and one of the things it said is to prove that it's a hardship if we don't, if the business isn't there and we do need a variance. So it's just a small business. We're just trying to keep the dogs safe and sheltered while they stay with us. It's not a big grand dog spa or anything like that. It's just a short, long, skinny metal building. So if the kennel's not enclosed, people aren't going to want to leave their dogs there. If we have 1,500 clients in the North County, so that's a lot of people that are going to not have anywhere to take their dogs besides the vet's office where they just stick them in a cage all day. So I just am asking you guys to, if there was some way to work around this, we're happy to work around and try to make this work. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. And I'll just confirm there are no other members of the public wishing to address the board on this. So, Ms. Holstein, if you wanted to summarize, we typically have a five-minute period at the end for summation or rebuttal, but nothing much to rebut. And you can use as little or as much of that as you
want.
Well,
thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank all of you for your time. I think we've done our homework. No, I know we've done our homework. It's not that we've done our homework. We've answered all really Public Works concerns, even though we're in the 100-year flood zone. His map, when I snapped the grid to see if the house is under the regulatory, on the website, it shows even that house under the regulatory. So it's kind of funny how you can snap that grid on and see where it really shows. And it's really funny to watch that grid as you go upriver. It moves around the housing projects that I think are probably in the flood zone, but they've been there a long time. But that's not the point. I do feel we've complied with everything that's here. I don't know anything much more from insurance to emergency fire. We've had CAL FIRE on that. We've had a surveyor for elevations. We've had an engineer drawing plans. I think we've more than wanting to work with Public Works and county staff to see if this can be rectified. I just hate to see us lose another business. I really hate to see us lose another service. And I do know from being on the Planning Commission, you can work with people on this stuff. I know that for a fact. And they make, you know, they're not making a lot of money. She already has $14,000, and that's not really the crutch of the whole thing, but it's a loss of another income. They do make around $115,000. I won't say make, that's probably gross on her dog kennel. So stretching to put the first was $10,000, and between the engineer, CAL FIRE, they paid $1,700, surveying was $600, engineering there was another $600, but anyways, around $14,000 they've already put out of their pocket for a dog kennel. So spending with a dog kennel at $20 a night, it takes a lot to recoup this. So she believes in her project, and she believes in her dog kennel. She believes that they need the service there in Atascadero. She's been at this for 17 years. She also does grooming. And I've been to their place, and it's immaculate. Even Clint Bullard from CAL FIRE was totally impressed. We already have the sockets are above the floodplain zone, which is a concern of Public Works. That's already was there. It's in place. Clint looked at all the electrical for us. He just said, get fire extinguishers in there, and he asked and put a water storage tank in there, a 2,500-gallon galvanized. That's been taking place. So we've complied to everything that CAL FIRE has asked of us. And that's for, and as for people, we're not talking humans. They're the people when they come on to the site, they cannot go back where the dog kennels are. They drop their dogs off and they go back in where the services are. So people aren't going to be all around. They don't come in at a certain time and you got a cluster of people. It comes in and out as they drop them in and they take them out. So I think really and truly this is a needed project. It's a needed service. And it's a person that really believes in her project. Or we wouldn't be here. She wouldn't have spent the money. It's a lot of money to be spending to prove, to show to you that we have complied. I think this can be worked out. I feel it's a long, thin building. Hasn't flooded in 30 years. I got on my website last night. I tried to find a rain thing, and I couldn't find any for the last 30 years. I was just curious the year prior to she purchasing the property, that's when the old steel bridge went out there, went across there by Heilman's. That old bridge went out because when the waters backed up and went out, it did not touch that property. So she bought that in 96. That was 1995. We had a significant rain at that time. They were looking at the property, and that property never flooded, but they took the bridge out. When FEMA goes and maps over, you know, I know it's just a generic for everybody how they have to do that. I mean, I see it at the planning level, but I think there's some exceptions out here, and the insurance is already covered. I don't know what more we could really do to show you the good faith in this project, and I hope you believe in the Tuckers and me and for approving this, or there might be some conditions that go along with it, but I know what she has spent, and I hate to see another business lost in revenue. And I think it's huge here in this county, as what's been going on. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Holstein. We'll close public comment at this point and bring it back to the board. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, and I have a question for Ms. Holstein. On the engineering plans that you shared with us, it talks about a flood wall. A flood wall is part of the improvements to the property?
Yes. Yes, it will be, so I get the clarification on that from Mr. Cudla, JK Engineering, last night, because at first I said, how didn't get the people in there? It's kind of funny. It's a wall, so when we get the notice, just like our emergency plan that we said we can take the buildings down in 8 hours, if we get the emergency, that wall can be put up to the specs that will suffice and stand the velocity of whatever it takes if it's flooded. It's just like if you're on back east and you have, if you're a FEMA there and you get the flood warnings on the ocean, they button the windows up, they button the hatches down to protect their homes. That's what we're doing, is protecting the dog kennel. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Meacham?
I do. Excuse me. I want to go back to the flood wall. Frank, have you seen this?
No, I didn't. I just learned of its existence a few minutes ago.
And I guess my question is, you know, if this does divert the water basically by establishing this flood wall, then does that compensate for anything here?
There are two issues to deal with. One is what happens to that structure during a flood event, and that engineer is proposing that he says they can keep the structure safe. I assume, without having looked at it, that that's what he's proposing. The other question is, by displacing this water, does it harm somebody else? That would need to be demonstrated. Does it cause flooding somewhere else? Given the topography and the size of lots and things out there, probably not, but that's something that needs to be verified and demonstrated. So two questions, the structure itself and impact your neighbors. It probably addresses one. I doubt that it addresses the other.
Well, the second one, I'm sure that could be somewhat verified. I don't think there's any neighbors very close by. I went down there and visited the site. I guess another big question is in the staff report, it talks about the National Fire or Flood Insurance Plan or program could result in negative economic impacts to those property owners currently in the program. If these folks were to hold the county harmless, does that have any bearing on this?
I don't think so. County Council might be able to answer that, but the way the regulations read is if the FEMA administrator, the one that administers this program, deems fit because of some failure on our part, he can raise everybody else's insurance rates.
Mr. Flynn seemed to be approaching the lectern with input on this.
Yeah, Dave Flynn with Public Works. Yeah, just the program itself with FEMA is one where they are constantly reviewing and what our compliance is under our land use codes. In fact, last year we had several dozen points that we had to address for compliance of the program. So it's something that's ongoing and checked. And then as Mr. Honeycutt kind of mentioned, then they would do a risk assessment to just see if they need to put us in a potential, wouldn't be necessarily a disciplinary action, but perhaps in kind of a status.
Watch status?
Yes, a watch status. And that then could subject us to essentially increased rates for everybody, an incremental annual cost.
So it seems to me, having dealt with a couple of these over the years, it seems to me in the question of being in or near a floodplain, development within the floodplain, although here the floodplain is the same as the floodway, has to be at the best case has to be a foot above it, and also has to demonstrate that if you have filled to do that, that you haven't displaced water in a way that's deleterious. The other option is to get the building out of the flood plain and floodway by relocating. Is that really the only two options that we see in terms of how those issues? Oh, well, there was one other option, which was, if I remember correctly, that folks can conduct a survey of some sort to confirm where the floodplain and the floodway actually exist. Is that an option?
Yeah, correct. That's something that was brought up by the applicants or the opponents here, too, is that there's a difference in terms of what elevations are right and the precise nature of the FEMA maps, which is why we would seek that additional information from an engineer to do that assessment, to confirm the realities of that particular site. Going back to the elevation for construction, though, as Mr. Honeycutt indicated, it's residential that has to be at least a foot above the floodplain. Other ancillary uses of the property, wouldn't be held to that standard. We do, though, still get into the floodway. And then, issues about whether an emergency plan, as brought up by the applicants, and floodproofing are applicable to this location, that would be something that we would really need to look at further for this particular case to see if it's applicable.
Well, go ahead, Ms. Arnold, and then Mr. Hill.
Yes, I had one other question of the applicants, and it's. You're showing us in this packet that even FEMA provides the opportunity for a variance, and in this case, you felt like you fit that opportunity if you have, under your particular circumstances, and if you have an emergency plan, which you do, that you have actually complied with FEMA's variance opportunity.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, if I could, if it were the if the board wanted to look at this a little bit further, what kinds of conditions would have to be met? I think we're all sympathetic to the project itself and what the Tuckers are trying to do and the time they've spent trying to make it work. Is there? I mean, I also understand, you know, how really narrow the opportunities for a variance are under the federal regulations. Is there any give in terms of conditions in terms of like getting a some sort of feedback from FEMA in advance or anything like that were that to be?
Dave Flynn with Public Works. Yeah, I think it's important that we just spend some time to look at, say, the submitted engineering plan to see how it could be, you know, in compliance or that provisions for that, you know, be done to allow it. But I think that would take, you know, our staff to come back, take a look at it, work with the applicants again in terms of what is the applicable issues. I heard, you know, that the electrical outlets are above, 3 feet or the flooding elevations, that there perhaps could be some areas to say that this could be approved. Again, we do have that issue about the floodway versus the floodplain, and right. That, again, would be something we have to consult with likely FEMA to get kind of an assessment there.
Right.
To take that route, though, I think that would be something where if your board wished to continue this item for a certain specific date.
Or maybe off calendar.
That would be, I mean, and I'll wait for my colleagues to weigh in. I would, rather than the flat out reject it, I think if there is a way to find, a way to condition it and to get some feedback from FEMA. I mean, if FEMA basically says, regardless, this is going to have an impact on others' insurance or the county's liability, then I don't think we really have anywhere to go in terms of setting conditions. But if we could look at whatever information they've presented and maybe get some more feedback, you know, at least there exists the possibility that we could have a conditioned project that would protect everybody's interests.
Yeah, I believe that would be the case. And as Mr. Honeycutt, you know, indicated, it's kind of a review of the flood-proofing of the site and then what impacts there are right. to the adjoining properties. And as noted, I don't think there really is too much of an issue about the downstream flooding concern, which we would, again, review with.
So I would, if my colleagues are amenable to that, I think.
Let's see. We got Mr. Meacham and then Ms. Arnold.
Yeah, and excuse me. And I'm really interested in looking how we can work with these folks. I mean, they've gone so far and spent a lot of money, but again, with the FEMA issue, it's a big deal, I guess. But in addition to that, we haven't had a chance. Staff hasn't had a chance to take a look at this, and I think that's important, so that at least that part of it can be taken out of the discussion if they've managed to construct a wall that's going to divert things. So I'm hoping that we'll continue to work with these folks to see if they can get this permitted all the way through, whatever we have to do. I don't know if that – I'll go to the supervisor of the district.
Yes, thank you for that. I'm quite satisfied with the exhibits that have been presented to us, showing us that FEMA itself grants variances, and this project has met those variances, along with our own CAL FIRE review. And I and the insurance company, a very prominent insurance company in the North County, has also weighed into this. So I would be I'm really close to just making a motion that we grant the variance here at the county. If my colleagues wanted to take some more time to have staff review it and work with the applicants, I just want to be sure this is a really prominent business and a needed business in the North County, and it has been in existence for a long time. Be sure that it doesn't interrupt their ability to do business while we're working this out.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I could not currently vote for a variance, so that's why I think that we should work with the applicant. I think that what we have here with the FEMA requirements, we need to figure out a way to look at new information that's been presented and get some feedback from FEMA and also see if there's a way to condition this project so that all of the possible unintended consequences are satisfied. I don't think they are right now. I'd like for them to get it. I think it would not be in anybody's interest to approve a project with those kinds of issues out there, regardless of who is behind the project or the value of the project. I mean, you still have those very important issues to address. So I'm more than willing to see if we can come to some way to make this project happen within some rather strict federal regulations about the floodway. I think hearing from Mr. Flynn and Mr. Honeycutt, and knowing Public Works staff, I think that they will do everything they can to try to make this work. And getting feedback from FEMA is going to be a critical part of that.
Did you want to respond to Mr. Hill? We have Mr. Meacham.
I do want to respond to Mr. Hill, if I may. Okay. So could you please specify exactly which – I'm looking at code coming from FEMA explaining their variance and understanding that the folks here have met that. So I'm wondering, and for staff's sake, what exactly are your concerns so that we don't – put this into that black hole of time.
Well, you could see him on the slide that Mr. Honeycutt had up before, but if you look at the issues of the potential insurance impacts on other members of the community, that's something that we'd have to work out and make sure that and also potentially the county's liability, which we heard we would not necessarily be relieved of if FEMA doesn't think that this is a reasonably approved project. That doesn't relieve of his responsibility. Whether the structure itself, with this new information in terms of what would happen to it in the event of a flood, would not pose any kind of risk. So there's a whole bunch of issues that I think, you know, if you look at in our packet, I think when you're looking at the federal regulations, page 304, page 432 of the larger packet, those issues that have to do with the regulatory floodway are really, as it says, the criteria for the exceptions are really narrow. I'm not satisfied that they have been met currently. I'm not convinced that they can't be met with more information and a little bit more work and maybe some conditions that protects the interests of the community, the county, and the applicants.
Okay. Yeah. May I ask Mr. Flynn before we move on to...
No, that's fine. Jim?
Mr. Flynn, when Supervisor Hill's talking about insurance impacts, can you clarify, are those FEMA insurance? Could you please
clarify Dave
that?
Flynn. As I was mentioning, essentially FEMA will review the program and our land use codes and the consistency with compliance with FEMA. And some of those actions would include what variances your board may grant. And that then becomes something that they would make an assessment on in terms of how the county as a whole is complying with FEMA. And from that, additional insurance or surcharges may be applied to, you know, all the applicants in the area. They essentially are kind of doing a risk assessment then of what the overall program's doing.
Okay. I, too, am considering the ability of these folks to stay in business, so I'm questioning the timeline for the information that you need to make a decision on whether or not they can maintain their business as they've had it.
From what I hear today is with this engineer's report or submittal and some of the points they brought up about emergency plans and how that may play out for this particular site, I would think that we could readily meet and look this over in the next couple of weeks and then just look towards setting a hearing date, you know, maybe a month or so from now just to essentially close the issue with the applicant, see where we stand, and then conclude the actual item.
Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Chair. And I would not want to make a decision on a variance and then have that come back and bite us later, especially the applicant, to go ahead and approve something, and they continue, and then all of a sudden a federal agency steps in, and we have a bigger problem on our hands. So from what I'm gathering, staff will work with the applicant to see if we can get these mitigated. Two things that I would ask Dave or Frank is, and I'm very familiar with Paso Robles' planning aspect about the river and some of the things we've done there. If they've had to mitigate things relative to FEMA issues as well in that floodplain, maybe we could find out from them what they did to be able to get by that. The second thing is, I don't know if it would be applicable, but to find a way to hold harmless the county in anything at all relative to this variance if it's granted, so that that way the county, all the citizens of the county are protected and go from there.
And if I might weigh in on that, I see also a staff light on. I don't know if someone wanted to go. We have a traditional hold harmless and indemnity when we take up appeal requests such as this. But I don't think it's realistic, frankly, to expect a small business owner to hold harmless a large number of folks in this county who have flood insurance and may suffer a rise in their rates. I mean, I'm very sympathetic to the Tuckers, and the business sounds like a much needed and much loved one. But, you know, I would note that they proceeded without permits and are having to do a little catch up. I'm willing to entertain a continuance on this, and if the clerk could find something that's about 6 weeks out, we could get a date certain, if that suits Public Works for that. But the FEMA thing is a big deal for me. This is a community. The land use like this is a balancing of the individual property rights with the community rights, and the matter of building in a floodway and a floodplain is a very significant one. And I think, as my colleagues have said on either side of me here, we need to be sure we know where we stand if and when this project might go forward. So I think there are a lot of questions to answer, and I would defer to the supervisor of the district for a motion to continue if clerk has a date.
Thank you for that. And I just want to reiterate that this has been an existing very valued business in our area for many, many years. And what's brought all this on is an improvement to the business to shelter the dogs while they stay. But anyway, that being said, I'll go ahead and make a motion then that we direct staff to work with the clients and agendize this for this
continuance to?
We have August 8th. We have.
I don't think we have August 8th anymore unless it's next year.
October?
October 8th.
Okay.
October 22nd.
I'd like to see us come back October 8th if that's fine.
I think we have a rather impacted agenda on that one.
On October 8th.
CEO isn't here.
The first is actually our.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I could ask.
Yes.
One thing that, if we are able to work this out and it's looking better than average, that we'll be able to do that. It may not be necessary to come back to the board unless that was your desire to do that, because variances can be approved at the staff level. And so,
Can you help me craft my motion then to fit your needs? If we'll be directing staff then to work with the applicants to conform to the.
Perhaps if we were to continue to a date certain, we'll just say 2-3 months from now, if we work it out, they can always withdraw their request.
Okay.
Thank you. So let's. We have council's light on, and we'll take a comment from council. Madam Clerk, if you could find something in toward the end of the year.
Reed and Neal County Council, I hate to disagree with Mr. Honeycutt, but we aren't certain that this can be, a variance can be granted at the staff level. It appears to us that it is a board decision.
Okay. May I start all over with my motion?
Well,
Jim Orton from County Council. I would just indicate that no notice and hearing to the public is required other than to the applicant. And so if staff concluded they could come back sooner, they can always put it on an earlier agenda.
Okay, so this is not a noticed hearing that requires continuance to a date certain, so we can continue to a date uncertain with direction to staff to come back at the earliest possible point.
That's correct.
Is that satisfactory, Ms. Arnold?
I guess it is.
No, it's not my motion. It's just trying to understand what we have to do in terms of noticing or not noticing. But that might be the way in which we get back at the earliest possible point.
That sounds fine.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second,
third, fourth. Can take this. Is clerk clear on the motion?
Who was my second?
Take Mr. Hill or Mr. Meacham, either one. Hill's easier to spell.
So it's come back off calendar.
It's going to come back at the. It's going to come back. It's been continued. It will come back when staff is ready to have it come back for board action, and that direction is at the earliest possible point. Okay. And with that, we can take it on a voice vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? None. With that, we've concluded the morning's business. Council informs me we do not have closed session. So we don't have any public comment on closed session, and we will be back here at 1:30. All right, thank you. We will reconvene the September 10th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. We didn't have closed session today, and so we do not have our traditional report from Council, and we will then move into our afternoon session, which starts with presentations, and I would entertain a motion on the presentation.
Move approval.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. With that, we will take a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. The first one up is a resolution proclaiming September 9th as National Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Awareness Day. And we have somewhere Lisa Frazier and in the audience Jan Campbell and Marilyn McDermott. I work with Lisa and with Jan on the Martha's Place Advisory Committee, MOCPOC. But Lisa, if you'd like to come to the lectern, it's my pleasure to read the following resolution. Whereas healthy children are the most important resource in San Luis Obispo County, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorders pose a serious threat to the potential health of our future generation. And whereas prenatal exposure to alcohol can cause birth defects, mental retardation, learning disabilities, attention deficits, and behavior disorders. And whereas in 2012, more than 30% of pregnant women in San Luis Obispo County reported drinking alcohol in their first trimester. And whereas fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are entirely preventable, and whereas people around the world began observing International Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Awareness Day on September 9th each year beginning in 1999, in order that on the ninth day of the ninth month of the year, the world will remember that during the 9 months of pregnancies, a woman should abstain from alcohol. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 9th as Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Awareness Day to promote awareness of the effects of prenatal exposure to alcohol, to increase compassion for those individuals so affected, and to minimize further effects, and to ensure healthier communities across San Luis Obispo County in the future.
Thank you.
And thank you for this opportunity to promote this very critical health issue. And good afternoon, members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Lisa Frazier, and I serve as the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Child Abuse Prevention Council. We are a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to the support of strong families and the prevention of child abuse and neglect through education, advocacy, and coordination of services. I'm looking for someone that might join me. Today, I'm representing Beginnings of San Luis Obispo County. We are a collaborative of health professionals and community members organized to promote our vision that San Luis Obispo County is a community where every child is born free of the effects of prenatal exposure to alcohol, tobacco, or other harmful substances. In recognition of National Fetal Alcohol Syndrome Day on September 9th, I know you may have seen all the flags that are posted on the county courthouse lawn and in front of the Cuesta College Library all week from September 9th through September 13th. Our aim is to raise the awareness of the significant number of babies that are born exposed to alcohol and other drugs and tobacco in the womb since tracking this in 2004. We have learned over the years that approximately 30% of pregnant women screened in San Luis Obispo County report using alcohol during their pregnancies. According to the Centers for Disease Control, There is no safe amount of alcohol to drink during pregnancy. Even small amounts of alcohol can affect fetal brain development and result in a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Children of mothers who drank alcohol during pregnancy may have trouble learning, following directions, sitting still, and most importantly, making friends. Parents of children with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder call it an invisible disease because their children appear to be quite healthy, yet they are unable to function and process their information like their peers. Also, we are only beginning to understand that prenatal alcohol damage is the only disability that, if not identified and treated, causes a high proportion of this population to end up incarcerated. I ask that you join us, Beginnings of San Luis Obispo County, in our effort to raise awareness of the effects of drinking alcohol, using tobacco and other substances during pregnancy by sharing our Don't Wait Till the Bottom of Your Drink to Think coasters, I'll give you some in a moment, with your regional constituents. Also, I want to present each of you with a Not a Mixer poster. And this is a billboard that is displayed on Monterey and Pepper Street, and it will be through the month of September. And I'd like to close. Okay, I don't see my... Oh, come on up. Come on. Excellent. And so while I give you your items I described earlier, I'm going to have Jennifer Stone join me. I have a script that she has not seen yet, but I wrote a big print, and I'm very confident you will deliver the message, and I'll hand these out as well. I'm going to move this.
Good afternoon, members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Jennifer Stone, and I work with Beginnings of San Luis Obispo County on a new project called the Beginnings Parent Partner Support Line. As a graduate of the Pogue Perinatal Outpatient Extended Group program provided by Drug and Alcohol Services, I am ready to help educate other pregnant women and mothers with newborns on this critical time in their lives. Most importantly, I want these new mothers to know that San Luis Obispo County is a community that cares and connect them to the many family resource centers located in our communities. In closing, I would like to announce that Martha's Place, our local children assessment and treatment center, will host an open house on Wednesday, October 2nd from 9 to 11. Please join us as we learn how to work together to meet the needs of children prenatally exposed to alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs.
Thank you so much, so much, Jennifer. You know, I caught myself as I said it was a pleasure to read this resolution. In fact, I read this resolution with, as I do, and have in previous years, with decidedly mixed emotion. The exposure, fetal exposure to alcohol, is responsible for a tremendous amount of pain and misery. But on the flip side of that, it's relatively straightforward to prevent. And in this county in particular, we have a remarkable group of people who put their heart and soul into correcting that disorder when it appears. The key being to identify it early, and through the work with entities like Martha's Place, therapies are remarkably effective to put kids back on track and to set them up for healthy and productive lives. And so I thank everyone that's involved in this, Lisa in particular, for this awareness, which I hope continues to build the preventive side of this effort. And it's a pleasure to work with those who work on the therapeutic side of this effort as we go forward. So thank you for your work. And if you haven't had a look at the display across the street, it's a striking visual as to the extent of this challenge. With that, we'll move to our second resolution, which is recognizing Cancer Awareness Month. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Heather, and if you'd like to come forward. And this is recognizing September as Cancer Awareness Month, and also celebrating an event that we have coinciding. Whereas cancer has touched the lives of many in our community, from those battling disease to those who have lost loved ones and those that support their friends and family members, According to the Center for Disease Control, one in two men and one in three women could be faced with a cancer diagnosis by the year 2030. Cancer is a dreaded diagnosis and has become more prevalent in today's society. Whereas the Sunset Savor the Central Coast Savor Run, presented by the City of San Luis Obispo and produced by the Central Coast Cancer Challenge, is a run-walk wellness event on Sunday, September 29th, that will raise funds and create awareness for local cancer resource services and support local cancer survivors and their families. The Central Coast Savor Run supports the Cancer WellFit Organization, a no-cost 10-week fitness program for cancer survivors. In the past, this event has donated more than $30,000 to help cancer survivors and their families in their continual healing. And whereas cancer survivors, their families, and friends are invited to participate in the Savor Run and be a part of the ceremony after the race, honoring survivors and remembering those who have been lost to the disease. And whereas together we can educate the community about the local cancer support resources available, support those who have the disease, support their families, bring wellness through activity and food choices, build camaraderie and fitness back into the survivor's life, and set all on a path of wellness. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 2013 as Cancer Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County.
Yeah, that's for you guys.
You want to take a picture real quick?
Lynn and Heather, we've got a...
We do have a...
Oh, good. That was good.
Photo op.
Yeah.
And I know you'd rather, you know, have a nice backdrop, but you got us.
Diorama. Caveman.
Thank you, Hannah. He's
Here. First of all, I want to thank you all for doing this. It's a great recognition. I usually, when I come and do these presentations, I ask people, please raise your hand if you've been touched by cancer. And usually almost everyone in the room raises their hand, so that's why we do this event. As the proclamation read, we've donated over $30,000 to local cancer support charities, and this year Cancer WellFit is our beneficiary, so I'm going to stop talking and let Lynn Watkins, she's a cancer survivor who's a graduate of Cancer WellFit, and she wants to say a couple of words.
Thank you for having us today. It's nice to be here. I am a cancer survivor. I speak as one for hundreds who have benefited from a program that tears muscles down in order to build them up again. I'm referring to the Cancer WellFit program that helps 50 cancer survivors per year at no charge. If you have been to a gym, if you have worked out lifting weights, riding a bicycle, or sweating on a treadmill, you know what it takes. It takes effort and resolve to make progress. With cancer treatment, energy is low and determination flags. Into this sometimes dire state of affairs steps Cancer WellFit. Jan Secord and Kate Wells guide groups of approximately 10 cancer patients through the tasks that can restore them to health. In partnership with Avila Bay Athletic Club, they train each individual in the group, warming up and gradually building endurance, then teaching the use of equipment and apparatus to strengthen and condition muscles weak from disuse. Attention is given to each person with their particular needs. The cancer patient is so very different from the norm. You may hear grunting and groaning as usual, but these people are at their lowest ebb. To be with a group supported and encouraged by Kate and Jan is a life changer. to actually have a schedule, a place to be that isn't at the doctor's office, is great in itself. Many of the wonderful cancer survivors in my group, including me, were too weak to drive themselves to the Avila Bay Athletic Club. So that generous club allows the loving assistants to stay and use the facility as well during the hour sessions that the Cancer WellFit provide. Twice a week for 8 weeks, personal training is given free of charge. So it's a nonprofit entity that can benefit so much from participation of the community. It's a marvelous program that deserves countywide community support. Cancer WellFit gets survivors out of the house and back on their feet. And thank you very much again for this proclamation. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for bringing this to our chamber.
One of our hopes this year is the Avila Bay Club is the facilitator, but we're trying to expand up to the Paso Robles Swim and Tennis Club. So that's going to be happening this year. And we just invite everybody to come out to our race. Even if they just want to walk, it's fine. But come out and participate and help us support our cancer patients and survivors. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Thanks for being with us today. And our final resolution is one recognizing Mexican Independence Day, El Grito de la Independencia, he said all in one breath. And we've asked Supervisor Arnold to read that for us, if you
Thank
would,
you
please.
Thank you for allowing me to read this resolution. It's been an honor and a pleasure to serve on the board of the Latino Outreach Council here in San Luis Obispo County for the last couple of years. And we're excited about the events this week. And with that, I'd like to read this resolution recognizing the 7th annual celebration of Mexican independence from Spain. Whereas on September 12, 2013, the Latino Outreach Council of San Luis Obispo County will observe the 7th annual local celebration of independence of the Mexican people from Spain. And whereas in the early hours of September 16, 1810, Father Hidalgo, accompanied by several conspirators, rang the bell of his little church, calling everyone to fight for liberty. This was the beginning of the Independence War, which lasted 10 years. And whereas this is the moment that every 16th of September is reenacted in every plaza or zocala of Mexico and commemorated by Mexicans all over the world, and whereas the Latino Outreach Council hosts the celebration of independence, El Grito de la Independencia, to increase public awareness and education about the history and culture of the Mexican people, and whereas the Consulado de Mexico in Oxnard has taken an active role in this celebration to highlight the Latino community's participation in the history and economy of California, and whereas Berenice Diaz-Ceballos, Consulado de Mexico, has provided outstanding service to San Luis Obispo County, representing the Latino community, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the 7th annual celebration of Mexican independence from Spain, El Grito de la Independencia, and expresses appreciation to the Consulado de Mexico in Oxnard and the Latino Outreach Council for the promotion of historical and cultural understanding and goodwill between the citizens of the United States of America and Mexico.
Come and receive your resolution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, do we have a Cecilia or CR may be able to
Buenas tardes, estimados supervisores. I am delighted to be here. I'm Jacqueline Del Valle Frederick. I am the chair of the Latino Outreach Council, a wonderful organization that serves to bridge cultures in our county. Our celebration of Las Fiestas Patrias, as you heard, will be held this Thursday at the Farmers Market at the corner of Higuera and Nepomo Street. We are honored that the Consul de Mexico, Berenice Diaz, will be present to actually perform the El Grito ceremony, which commemorates this special celebration of the independence of Mexico from Spain. The Latino Outreach Council serves as a resource network, building bridges between community and the Latino community and other citizens, and is committed to supporting and offering community events to educate and raise cultural awareness in this county. The Latino Outreach Council would like to thank all of its members and the many volunteers who will help make the Fiestas Patrias possible. And we especially want to thank you, the Board of Supervisors, for your annual support each and every year, because without your support, we would not be able to put on this great event. We'd also like to recognize the county for having placed the bell in the government building, which is the replica of the bell that was used at the original call for Mexico's independence in 1810 by Miguel Hidalgo. It serves as a concrete symbol of part of California's history and connection to Mexico and the Latino community. On September 16, 1810, Father Miguel Hidalgo, a parish priest of the village of Dolores, gathered his congregation and called for Mexican independence from Spain, which had ruled Mexico for 300 years. Father Hidalgo ended his speech by calling out, "Mexicanos, viva Mexico!" To this day, the call for independence for Father Hidalgo is referred to as El Grito de Dolores. We will celebrate Mexico's independence with you and all the other residents of the county, and we invite the residents to come to the corner of Higuera and Nepomo Street on Thursday at the Farmers Market, where we will honor and explore Mexico's rich history and cultural legacy at the heart of the Farmers Market. Please join us, because we will have, in addition to the El Grito flag ceremony with the Consul de Mexico, we will also have Aztec dancers, mariachis, and folklorico dancers. Once again, thank you very much for this honor.
Thank you, Ms. Fredericks. And thank you to the Latino Outreach Council, who does a lot of work all through the year in this a crowning celebration. So we appreciate your efforts. With that, we have one business item. Item 26 was withdrawn. And so, Madam Clerk, if you would introduce item 27.
Item number 27, consideration of a request to authorize a general plan, local coastal plan amendment by Chevron Environmental Management Company to amend the Avila Beach specific plan and the San Luis Bay area plan to change the land use category from industrial to recreation and include development standards for the future redevelopment of the former Avila Tank Farm, District 3.
Ms. Carroll.
Right. Ellen Carroll, Environmental Coordinator from the Planning Department. This item today is a request for the board to authorize staff to begin the processing of the general plan amendment. Ryan Hostetter is our project manager, and she's going to be making the presentation today.
Ms. Hostetter.
Thank you, Ellen and members of the board. My name is Ryan Hostetter. I'm a senior planner with the Planning Department. And we are here today to request authorization from your board to begin processing the local coastal plan amendment, specific plan amendment for the Avila Tank Farm property. The request is to change the land use category from industrial to recreation and amend the Avila Beach specific plan to include development standards for the reuse of the site. The site is adjacent to the coast. It's in the community of Avila Beach, which is approximately in between San Luis and Pismo off of 101. This is a view of our current land use category map for the site. It's currently industrial. It's within the Avila Beach Urban Services area and within the Avila Beach specific plan area as well. The request by the applicant, Chevron Environmental Management Company, is to change the entire approximately 95-acre site to the recreation land use category. The property is a part of the current specific plan area, but was not a part of the original town cleanup, and I'll give you a little refresher of Avila history here. So back in the mid-1990s, petroleum was found while a construction project was being undertaken in town, and as a result of that, the contamination was further mapped, and a major cleanup project was undertaken for the community. As a result of that, the specific plan of Avila Beach was drafted that really was to deal with the redevelopment and future growth of that area that was removed as a part of the cleanup. I'll go through a couple pictures here. This is a picture of Avila during the cleanup, and it was most of the downtown and what we know as Front Street today, and where the yacht club was moved as a result of that cleanup. And during that time, the tanks on the tank farm property were removed as well. This is a view of the tank farm site with the tanks on the upper picture, and then down below, just before the cleanup actually started, downtown here, the tanks were removed. So this property is really left over from the previous industrial life that once occupied Avila, and the infrastructure that would allow the site to continue as an industrial use has largely been removed through the cleanup of the town. The site is slated for remediation, and Chevron is going to undertake this regardless of the change in the zoning. And that's being undertaken by Chevron not because of any requirement of them to date, but because they are opting to do that cleanup. So the site is, again, within the specific plan area, and the specific plan discussed the tank farm site and left it really for further discussion when a remediation plan and a future project would be anticipated. And the plan, as it states today, requires that the project would be required to amend the specific plan so that it would include development standards for this site. Within the specific plan today, however, there is a vision and a concept that is discussed and outlined. The property is discussed conceptually as a conference center or hotel clustered at the top of the site in the previously disturbed tank farm area. This is a graphic right out of the specific plan, and this is, they had done a concept vision for where some type of conference center could be located. So that's what's in our specific plan today that we would be amending. As a part of this entire project, the county is going to be acting as lead agency to conduct the CEQA process, and we've kind of started that process a little bit already. However, that CEQA process is anticipated to be an EIR, and that will not only include this specific plan, general plan amendment, but it'll also include the remediation as well as any future development on the site. So that CEQA document is really going to be looking at the whole of the action all the way to future development. So today we are requesting that your board authorize the local coastal plan amendment portion of the process, and Framework for Planning guides these general plan amendments with purpose and character statements. So in summary, the purpose and character statements for recreation would be that the site is appropriate for these visitor-serving uses. There's a value to the outdoor area that would serve this type of public recreational need. And this site does fit these statements. It's a blufftop property on the coast. It's a potential connection for the coastal trail and a connection for those visitor-serving beach community of Avila Beach that it's adjacent to. So with that, staff would ask your board to provide direction on moving forward and authorizing this change to the local coastal program or to not authorize the processing. And we're available for any questions, and the applicant has a presentation as well.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hostetter. I appreciate also the history there to refresh my memory of something I remembered vaguely but brought a little bit back to life. Any questions of my colleagues for staff at this point? Seeing none, I know we have representatives from Chevron here. I have no request to speak, but you're welcome to address us. Your name for the record, please. And,
Hi, I'm Debbie Rudd with RRM Design Group. Good afternoon, supervisors. And I'm working with Chevron, and I'm just going to give you a short little presentation on where we are. So, like Ryan said, the property is 95 acres. It's located between the ocean, Avila Beach Drive, the town, and Cave Landing Road. For the last 100 years, has been blocked off from the public, and with this project, there's an opportunity to open it up to the public, incorporating a resort and some preserved open space and a coastal trail connection. This property's been studied for many years. In 2001, when this specific plan was adopted, a number of uses were suggested. Since 2001, there's been a number of community workshops. There have been AVAC meetings, number of meetings with different Chumash communities, and the most recent was last November in 2012 when we had another community workshop to kind of kick off this application process. We're here today asking for authorization to proceed with an application, and hopefully we'll have an application in by the end of the year, the beginning of 2014. This is a great historic image from 1931, and it shows the old company housing, it shows the tanks. Shortly after in 1920s and 30s, the site was the largest shipping port by volume anywhere in the world. This image from 1940 shows how heavily industrialized the site has been in the past before the tanks were taken down in 1998. And the site today is under, we're doing many studies, been studying the site for quite a while. Not only a team of scientists with the Avila Tank Farm team of scientists studying it, but also collaboratively with ATCAT, which is the Avila Technical Collaborative Assessment Team, includes Fish and Game, Air Pollution Control District, County Environmental Health, County Planners, and Central Coast Regional Quality Water Control Board. So collaboratively really looking at the site, analyzing what's there, what needs to be done to make it a clean, safe site for future use. The vision is really open space restoration integrated with this resort component and surrounded by open space. I like this image because it shows on the left-hand side the existing in yellow that 56% of the site was previously disturbed and used for industrial purposes. What our hope is to reduce that yellow, and really the exhibit on the left or on the right is showing that yellow area would be where resort components would be used, both buildings, but also a large part of that would be resort landscaping. And then the rest of the green would be 62% of the site being left to open space. So the yellow in this slide shows kind of the building envelope where the resort landscaping and the resort buildings would be located. And then the black dot shows where the coastal trail would be locating, connecting downtown Avila Beach over to the future county trail on Cave Landing Road. And then the green shows another opportunity for a community amenity, like a park-like setting with open space, maybe an amphitheater, some benches, trails down to that area. This project would bring a lot of community benefit. One, public access to the property for the first time in over a century, but not only access, but the long-term maintenance and stewardship of that land and the economic benefits that would be for the existing businesses in Avila, along with tax benefits the county would realize. But probably most important to many people would be the environmental restoration and that open space preservation that would come along with a resort of this nature. There's an Avila Point website, avilapoint.com. There's more information about the project, the history, and there's ongoing updates as things evolve, and we'll be keeping that up to date. So if you have any questions, we're here to answer them. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Rudd. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rudd, if you could go back to that one map that you had with the park area near the bluff.
Can you start the slideshow again? This one?
No, the that one, yeah. So if I'm correct looking at the legend that you have off to the right, the park-like area open to the public with amphitheater as a possibility?
Yeah, so let's see how this works. This mouse doesn't work unless I have it on something. Okay, so this dark green area?
Yes.
That is an area that's relatively flat, great views, closest to the ocean there, still up on the bluff. Right. But that area is, the plan would be to make it like a park-like setting, have an amphitheater, maybe some trails that connect back up to this dotted line, which would be the coastal trail connection, benches and...
Right now is Chevron considering would conceivably be in possession or manage that?
We haven't even discussed that at this point.
Is it? Well, I guess I would ask one consideration, perhaps that it would be public.
Yes, this would the idea at this point is that this whole area would be public, the coastal trail, and then this green area as well would be open to the public.
Okay. But it hasn't been discussed as to whether it would belong to the public.
You know, we haven't really discussed who's going to maintain it, whether it's going to belong to the public or, yeah.
Okay.
Unless Bill wants to. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't know if there are any other representatives of Chevron who wanted to speak, seeing no one rushing forward and seeing no members of the general public and having no requests to speak. I'll go ahead and close it to public input and bring it back to the board for a discussion. Mr. Hill, do you want to lead us off?
Yeah. You know, this is essentially, for the public process at least, the beginning of what will probably be a rather involved journey, I would say, considering that ultimately there will have to be several agencies involved in a coastal permit with coastal commissions. So Chevron has... done quite a bit of outreach to our community in Avila, and have been receiving feedback, and so I do think it's appropriate for us to move it forward in the process that will be interesting to all, and certainly as you might tell from my question, I'm interested to see what important public benefits might occur from what does go on there. It is a really amazing property in terms of the views and some of the things that it would allow people in our community to have access to. So, I think we should begin the process, and I guess we'll periodically be involved as it comes forward. So I'll make a motion when it's appropriate.
All right. I didn't know North County colleagues had comments on this?
Second.
Okay. Well, we'll why don't you go ahead and make the motion, Mr. Hill, and we'll take Mr. Meacham's second, just so the clerk is clear.
Okay. So I'm moving that we authorize the general plan, local coastal plan amendment by Chevron Environmental Management Company to amend the Avila Beach specific plan and the San Luis Bay Area Plan Coastal to change the land use category from industrial to recreation and include development standards for the future redevelopment of the former Avila Tank Farm.
I'll second it again.
We'll do that again. Under discussion, I just had a couple of comments. I think
Indeed, this is going to be a long journey, and I wish goodwill, good faith, and good fellowship on all those who engage the conversation. I have optimism that it can be successfully conducted. I think it is a clear and important next step in the history of Avila as we get past the cleanup that so dramatically affected that community. The one issue that I had talked to staff a bit about is that in going to a recreational land use category, which I think is the right one, were we to put that land use category on this property, it in and of itself would allow a very wide range of use. And it seems to me that this site is better suited for a more focused kind of use, and I wonder if staff could talk about that discussion as part of the general plan amendment process.
Sure. This is Ryan Hostetter. As a part of the specific plan amendment, there could be language proposed in there that limits the uses to something similar to what's in there now, like a conference center, and working with the applicant and the coastal process on what that language will be, but it can be limited through the process.
So what we're trying to do is refine the specific plan to the particular vision that Chevron is putting forward and come to something that we can then use to get approvals for whatever development and land ownership. Okay, that's great. With that, I'm comfortable. I do believe that we can take this on a voice vote. So I will ask all those in favor to say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, none. And we wish you well on this adventure. With that, we are done with today's business, and we'll reconvene next Tuesday.